Hey everyone, it's Nate with a special edition of The Vinyl Guide. Now, as you can probably already tell, today's episode is a little bit different than the others. There's a lot of noise in the background, the recording quality is significantly different, you'll probably hear babies crying and some rumbling here and there. No, I'm not in Detroit. Don't worry, this sound quality will only last a few minutes while I do this intro. Right now, I'm approximately 35,000 feet up in the air, halfway between Sydney, Australia, and Los Angeles, California. Now, why am I going to Los Angeles, California? Well, the answer's simple. Quite often, I get emails from folks and from listeners around the world asking where to shop for records. Now, a lot of people find themselves in Southern California, either traveling for business or for work, and I'm from California, and I'm quite familiar with Southern California, so I thought I'd take the opportunity to provide some tips out to the vinyl collecting community on places to shop and things to do that are record-related in Southern California. Now, I'm going to collect some interviews over the next few weeks and share them out mainly with record shops and collectors and folks that are pretty well known in the vinyl community, and give everyone, all our international travelers, some tips and tricks on what to do when you find yourself in Los Angeles and you want to bring some records home. So, I hope you enjoy this series. You can always reach out to us online, www.thevinylguide.com. Email me direct at Nate, N-A-T-E, at thevinylguide.com. And of course, we're at Facebook and Instagram at /vinylguide. Now, with that, I'm going to go ahead and signal the stewardess over to bring me a beer. Hopefully, I'll pass out and get a little sleep on the plane so I wake up bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in Los Angeles and ready to talk records. All right, I'll join up with you soon. Cheers.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to the first episode of The Vinyl Guide podcast for 2016. Hooray! Hey, look, I hope everyone had a great holiday. I hope there was a great Christmas or Hanukkah or Happy New Year, Kwanzaa, whatever you guys celebrate. Even if you don't celebrate anything, I hope you spent some time with family and friends and had a great time. Hopefully the turntable was involved there somehow. I'm sure, you know, being a vinyl collector, a bit of a vinyl head, I'm sure that was never too far from the equation. But I do hope everyone had a great holiday. I had a fantastic break. I spent about 3.5 weeks in Southern California doing a vinyl road trip. And I'm going to be sharing a lot of that information with you guys over the coming weeks and months here on the podcast. Really, if you're a vinyl collector and you've never been to Southern California, I would suggest that that's a life goal. That's something you want to do at some point in your life, because Los Angeles for record collectors is like Mecca. It really is. There are so many record stores. There is so much content and stock and really, and it's also close to one another that no matter what it is you're looking for, even if you're looking for nothing, you'll find it there. There's so many shops and so many interesting people, and it's a community. They really get along well. Quite often, they recommend others if they don't have what it is you're looking for. So Los Angeles is an incredible place to do some record shopping, and I'm going to share that information with you over the coming weeks and months here on the show. I also want to really thank everyone who's been tagging and sending messages, not only in Instagram, at Vinyl Guide, or at Facebook, facebook.com/vinylguide. Make sure you like you like that page if you're on Facebook. I've seen a lot of people sharing pictures of things that they got for Christmas, new records that they've added to their collection. I've seen Shotgun Sith. His collection is certainly growing. Grubworm, congratulations, Grubworm. He found a copy of the Mars Volta Francis the Mute album, which is very hard to find, and it's an awesome album. I don't have it. I wish I did, and apparently Grubworm found a copy for cheap. So congratulations, Grubworm. Well done for that. And I also want to thank everyone who's been giving us these positive, super positive, really, iTunes reviews. Let me tell you something. When you start a podcast and you connect with Apple, it takes a while before they start rating you. They start putting you in the different podcast charts. And that is largely based on the amount of people who are commenting either positively or negatively on your podcast. Now, the Vinyl Guide has started going up the charts because a lot of you guys have started commenting and giving positive reviews. So that is fantastic. I do want to thank you and everyone else out there. If you have a few minutes, you enjoy this podcast, please take some time to go over to Apple iTunes. It only takes about a minute or so. Give us a review. Hopefully it's a good one. Write some comments, and that would be much appreciated. That really helps drive the visibility and the subscribership here at The Vinyl Guide. Now, our subscribership's starting to grow and grow and grow. We've got listeners in the U.S. and Australia and the U.K. We've got a bunch in the Ukraine as well. It really is starting to become a bit of a global community. So, again, I really want to thank everyone who's participating and helping that grow. My goal here for 2016 and beyond is really to give you guys the best vinyl podcast possible. I want to make this very interesting. I want to make it consistent. You know, we're going to keep the weekly cadence going for the time being, and really to share a lot of interesting stories and content for people who love vinyl records and music as much, if not more, than I do. So anyway, that's my little welcome back spiel. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about this vinyl road trip that I gave you a bit of a preview on. I'm going to be talking about New Year's vinyl resolutions. I've had a lot of time on airplanes the last few weeks, and I really thought about how I want to change my approach to record shopping going forward. So I'll be sharing that with you. And then I'll be speaking with a guy who's really a legendary record collector, vinyl fan, music fan, really. He's based out of Los Angeles, but he's known worldwide. He goes to record fairs, and he deals records all over the world, a guy named Mike Vague. And he's dedicated his life to the art and process of collecting records. And he's got some really interesting insight, which I'm going to be sharing with you. I was lucky enough to catch up with him in LA. It was an absolute privilege to speak with him. And we'll take you through that later on in the episode. So with that, let's get the show on the road, shall we? Now, as mentioned, I just got back from about a month-long vinyl road trip in Southern California. Now, Southern California is an incredible area for a vinyl or record collector to go. It is very rich in record shops and record dealers, and the community there it really hasn't gone away. You know, you see the vinyl resurgence and around the world. In Southern California, it's kind of always been there. And to give you an idea, the size of the community, it's about 150 vinyl record stores, all within a drive of one another. If you're in Southern California and you have a car, you could hit a dozen record shops a day, no problem. And again, to give you an idea, there's actually a magazine. It comes out every other month, called Record Collector News, just on the record shops and information, you know, near and dear to the vinyl collecting community's hearts that are in this magazine. It's a free magazine. Again, it's called Record Collector News. If you go to Los Angeles, to record shop, one of the first things I would recommend you doing is finding a record shop that gives these away. Most of them do by the door, you know, with all the flyers and stuff. You'll find a copy of the Record Collector News, and it will give you a lot of information that will make your trip even better. A lot of coupons, even sometimes, for getting, you know, 10-20% off a different record shop. So that magazine is called Record Collector News. But quite often, when you want recommendations, the clerks in the shops in Southern California will actually give you directions to other shops, because, you know, they are familiar, they're collectors as well. And if they don't have something you're looking for, you know, they'll direct you to another local shop who may have what you're looking for. So one of the reasons of the vinyl road trip is that I'm originally from California. I'm from Northern California, from San Jose, around the San Francisco Bay Area. But I've spent a lot of time in Southern California as well. And I've been record shopping in Southern California for years and years and years. And I've developed some favorite shops. And quite often, I will get questions from people around the world asking where to shop for records in California. So I wanted to give those recommendations, but I didn't just want to say, hey, we'll go to this shop and that shop. I wanted to illustrate why you should go to that shop. So I went to these different stores, some of the ones that I recommended I go to, you know, as frequently as I'm there. And I spent some time with the owners, and I spent some time with the people who stock the shelves. I spent some time with the people who really influence the stock that they have and have really helped made the store the identity that it has. And I spent some time speaking with them and interviewing them, and I will be sharing those interviews on the Vinyl Guide podcast over the course of the next several weeks and months. Hopefully that's going to give you guys a lot of information that you need in order to make the most of any record buying trip in Southern California. Now, I'm not going to draw it out. Here are the shops that I spoke to and the ones that I would recommend you checking out if in Southern California. Now, obviously, in Hollywood, you got to check out Amoeba because it's just so huge. It really is incredible, the size of this record shop and the volume of their operation. It really is quite astounding. There's also a shop there called As the Record Turns, which is walking distance from Amoeba. Very different. It's not nearly as large, but still very important, which, again, I'll share these interviews later for you to be able to understand why. Highland Park spoke to Permanent Records, as well as Gimme Gimme Records, two great little shops within walking distance of one another. Great stock, great attitudes. I really love those shops. Costa Mesa, Cream Tangerine Records, which was really, really cool. Had a great conversation there, as well as Port O-Sound, which has a very unique twist as well. Long Beach, Bagatelle, they've got a lot of really cool stock that they just like to move, so they price it low, which is always nice. San Diego, I spent some time there, spoke to four shops there, Feel It, Record City, Beatbox Records, and Folk Arts Rare Records. There's more in there as well, but those are the shops that I tend to recommend and steer people towards, and I'm going to be speaking to them over the course of the following weeks and months again to share with you more details as to why those shops are unique and why I recommend them. Now, there are a lot of shops that, quite honestly, I didn't get to, and so I'm not saying that shops other than these 10 or so are bad. I'm just saying there's so many I didn't, you know, there's only a limited amount of time that you could have in doing this. And I wanted to do it right and I wanted to do it thorough. There's also some shops that I did visit that didn't make the list. And I'm not going to call them out necessarily simply because there's some shops that I just can't recommend. I won't recommend. And, if you get with me privately one-on-one, I'll tell you why. But I'm not going to call them out here because really anyone who's selling records, in my mind, if they're in the record industry or supporting vinyl, then, you know, they're kind of doing, you know, the Lord's work, right? So I'm not going to call them out. I'm not going to kick them in the nuts. But they're certainly not ones that I would call out or recommend to the listeners here. So in my experience, these are the shops that I would recommend if you're in the neighborhood, if you're in the area, to go out of your way to check out because they really are cool. Amoeba, As the Record Turns, Permanent Records, Gimme Gimme Records, Cream Tangerine, Porto Sound, Feel It, Folk Arts Rare Records, Record City, Beatbox Records, and Bagatelle. Now, that's just the record shops. Southern California also has a tremendous number of record swap meets, record shows, record fairs. They've got a couple that are consistent pretty much every month. There's the Pasadena Record Fair, which is every Sunday, the first Sunday of every month. And then there is the Buena Park, the Orange County show, which is the last Sunday of every month. And of course, there's a few exceptions here and there, like on Christmas and that sort of thing. But for the most part, if you are in Southern California and one of these record swaps are happening, I suggest you make your way to one of these because here you have, several dozen, maybe even over 100 dealers all in the same room with some fantastic stock. And these swap meets are often where record shops get a lot of their stock. So you can actually go and buy these things at, you know, kind of the wholesale price or directly from the dealers. And you can find some remarkable deals here. And I was lucky enough to be there while the Pasadena City Flea Market was happening. There were just some incredible deals there. It's one of these sort of things to where you can go to the swap meet and there are so many record dealers that you really have to plan your time accordingly. Like we showed up there early in the morning and before you know it, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you're barely halfway through it. So my recommendation is if you are planning a trip to Southern California or if you're in Southern California and you've never been to one of these swap meets, you got to check them out because it really is a phenomenal opportunity with dozens and dozens of record dealers there ready to make a deal, quite honestly. You can negotiate and you can find a lot of stuff you're looking for all in one place. And therein lies a problem, because when you have all these great record shops and these great opportunities with the record swap meets and the private dealers and a bit of an insatiable appetite like I have, you end up, I won't say I got myself in trouble, but I went. Maybe I did get myself in trouble. My wife had the eyebrow that was like, oh my God, this is what I married into. I ended up bringing home about 300 LPs. 300. Yeah, I know. And it's great stuff. It's fantastic stuff. In fact, I won't tell you about it all here. Follow me on Instagram at Vinyl Guide or on Facebook at facebook.com/vinyl guide. I'll post the stuff there and I'll give some more information out there. It'd just be boring if I talked about it here. But just logistically, 300 albums, it took up 9 suitcases plus some carry-on. But I got them all home. They're all in great shape. I'm so stoked. It's going to take me a month and a half to clean them and to get them kind of ready to go. You know, many of them are playable right now. Some of them kind of need to be, you know, given the once over because they may have been neglected for a while. But I got some really cool stuff and I can't wait to share it. So follow me on Facebook at vinyl/vinylguide and on Instagram at vinylguide, and you'll hear more about the loot, the personal growth that my collection had due to this vinyl road trip. Okay, so I've given you a bit of a high overview of this Southern California vinyl road trip. I will be sharing more over the coming weeks, some additional interviews. Today, I'm going to be featuring an interview from a record collector, Mike Vague, who's fairly well-known in Los Angeles and around the world for record collecting. He's going to give some information, his perspective on his life of collecting records. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And as you know, it is now 2016. It is a new year. It is time for turning over a new leaf. A lot of people make New Year's resolutions, whether they're going to lose weight or whether they're going to, you know, finally use deodorant or whatever they're going to do. I have decided to change a little bit, to augment a little bit of my behavior when it comes to record collecting. So really, I've made 5 what I'll call major New Year's vinyl resolutions, and I'll share those with you right now. So, number 1, avoid eBay where possible. Okay? Now, eBay is a good service. I'm not anti-eBay. When it comes to many industries, when it comes to, you know, being able to buy a mouse pad or, you know, something that does not have a subjective quality to it. But records are very subjective. And I've found that when I buy off eBay, quite often it's a bit of a crapshoot. I'm disappointed maybe 30% of the time. And I feel that for the times that I get really good deals on stuff on eBay, it tends to kind of even out with the bad times. So I should have just gone to a store to buy a record rather than trying to fish on eBay. What I'm trying to say is there's several flaws in the whole eBay business model for record collectors. First off, items typically go for the top price. You're not going to find some incredible deals there that somebody else isn't going to see and isn't going to bid against you. So you're probably going to pay the high end of the market value for it, which is fine if you're just looking for one thing to kind of fill a gap in your collection. You've been searching for it for 25 years or whatever, and finally, here's your opportunity to have it. By all means, use eBay for that. That's fine. However, when it just comes to, you know, finding some records for a bit of creative, eBay is not the model for that. You're going to be paying top price. You're not going to be getting any deals for it. Also, many dealers don't really know how to grade. There have been several times where I've bought a record where the person says it's excellent or it's near mint, and I get it, and I'm like, well, this is barely VG. This is in crap condition. And of course, then you have to pay shipping and everything back or complain. You kind of get that bad blood going. So it's just kind of a pain in the butt. Records being so subjective, I really like to be able to look at it, to see it, to make sure it is the quality it's supposed to be, and also buy it from a reputable dealer who knows how to grade records and knows how to price them. So that's one of the reasons I'm going to avoid eBay where possible in the new year. It's also not that fun. You know, I like crate digging. I want to kind of go. I want to get into the work. I want to put my hands in there. I want to find something. I want to be surprised. This last trip, I had an incredible opportunity to just dig through many different stores, and I found some records that I'd forgot about, that I forgot I wanted. I always wanted a first pressing of Wild Man Fisher, an Evening with Wild Man Fisher, and I kept forgetting about it. I just put it out of my head because it was too expensive. Well, lo and behold, on this trip, I found one in a crate for cheap. So that's the type of thing that I like to be able to do. With eBay, it's really, in my mind, only good for finding something that's missing in your collection that you could then just kind of grab and say, I have it, and be done with it. But for, you know, regular run-of-the-day business, I'm going to avoid eBay where possible. Now, New Year's vinyl resolution number 2, support stores that have a limited online presence. All right, let me explain this, okay? Now, I understand in today's market, in today's environment, every store needs to have some sort of online presence. I get that. However, what I've found is that there are many stores out there that they will find stock, they will bring in used product or whatever, and they will separate what they put in the store from what they put online. And to give you an idea, there's one shop that I found, I'm not going to name their name, but when you go into the shop, you see kind of all the stuff that they can't sell online, or it's not really worth them selling it online because of the listing fees and that sort of thing. They kind of keep their B-grade stuff in the store, and they take their A-grade stuff and they put it on eBay to get top dollar, which essentially means when you go into their shop, you're kind of seeing the leftovers. You're seeing the stuff that they consider not that valuable. And they're taking the stuff that you kind of do want or you're interested in seeing, and they're really kind of putting it out there for the highest bidder, which if you're interested in making a profit, that's a fine way to go. However, if you're interested in getting a following and creating a loyal customer base, that is not the way to do it. So I'm interested in supporting stores that have a limited online presence. Now, I also get, you know, some shops, they will find a record that is worth thousands and thousands. And that is something that's like a rent maker, right? You know, and I get it when a store finds something like that, that they have to go beyond their local community to be able to get, you know, a top dollar for. They may find this ultra rare punk rock or garage album or, you know, 78 that, you know, their local community is probably not going to appreciate as much as someone who's kind of out there and is a collector of that and can really give them what they need so they can continue operating for their local community. That's fine. I have no problems with that. I'll continue to shop at those sort of stores. I totally get it. To me, I'm going to start avoiding the stores who put the majority of their stuff online and really have a storefront that has kind of the dregs, the stuff that no one else wants, the Andy Gibbs and the, you know, the Ann Murray's and, you know, the really rough copies that they can't sell online. So that is a New Year's resolution number 2. Support stores that have limited online sales. Now, New Year's vinyl resolution number 3, don't be so concerned with first pressings. I have to admit, over the last few years, I've become a bit of a vinyl snob. You know, I'm always looking for first pressings, and I'll be, you know, digging through a crate, you know, and all of a sudden I'll find a record that I've wanted, and I'll get really excited, and then I'll turn it over, and it's a reissue. And almost immediately I discount. Almost immediately I'm like, I need to just move on. This isn't for me. And that's the wrong behavior, and something I definitely am going to modify going forward. First pressings are great, and generally people celebrate first pressings because it's the closest to the artist. It's the one that they and their teams have overseen. It was released in their lifetime, typically. That's the sort of thing, and they're collectible, right? However, they also become more expensive too, and there are some instances where you have some LPs that you either get the reissue for $15, or you get the first pressing for $500, and that's the sort of behavior that I'm the snobbery that I'm going to change. I'm not a man with unlimited resources. Let's be very clear about that. However, what I would do is I would pass up kind of a $5 or $10 purely great listenable copy in hopes that one day I will find that first pressing for cheap, or at least where I could afford it. So I need to change that because I'm missing out on a lot of great music. You know, I mean, a reissued Hank Mobley is better than no Hank Mobley at all. So I need to get over that. It must be a first pressing or it's crap. That's something totally in my head. Maybe you guys are struggling with that as well. So in 2016, hopefully beyond, I'm going to be less concerned about first pressings. I'm just going to go for the music that I love, the music that I want to hear. And if it is on a reissue and perhaps it is one or two generations behind, slightly, you know, slight audio differences, it's fine. It's cool. I need to just kind of mellow out on that. So third New Year's vinyl resolution, don't be so concerned with first pressings. New Year's vinyl resolution number 4, clean and maintain my equipment consistently. Now, I think I'm pretty good with this, but I think I can do better. And to give you an example, like the stylus, I almost rarely clean it. I kind of only get involved when there's a problem, and I need to be more proactive with it. So this year, I'm going to, I don't want to get so detailed that I have a calendar I have to follow, but regularly I want to be able to clean the stylus, bring out the alignment protractor, make sure I'm good there, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, it'll give you the best sound. If you do that fairly regularly, you make sure that your equipment is in tip-top shape and it's in the condition it should be in for optimal playback, you'll have brilliant sound all the time. And number two, it's just really kind of protecting your investment, not only in records, but also your equipment, because a misaligned stylus could, you know, it could start to wear a little bit on your records, but it could also really wear the stylus out prematurely. So I need to be a little bit more consistent with my cleaning, my maintenance, and making sure the equipment is running smooth for my records. So New Year's vinyl resolution number four, clean and maintain my equipment a bit more consistently. And the final New Year's vinyl resolution. Resolution number five, make time for experimenting with new music. Now, I don't do this as much as I used to. When I was a teenager, I used to love going to the record shop with $8 in my pocket and having no idea what I'm going to come home with. And that was how I discovered a lot of bands, like Metallica was one that I'd never really heard Metallica, but when I saw the album Ride the Lightning, the cover kind of intrigued me, and you know, there seemed to be a bit of a good buzz around it. And then I guess the record store guy probably pointed me in a direction. I ended up picking up the album and loving that album, and it kind of got me into this whole new genre of thrash when I was a teenager. So that's just one of, you know, dozens of examples I have of going into a record shop, not knowing what I'm going to come home with, and then coming home with something that is really remarkable and perhaps even changed me fundamentally. So I want to take some time to make sure that, and really set budget aside. So I'm thinking like 10% of my monthly record budget I'm going to set aside for experimenting. And, you know, I could do this with in a variety of different ways. I can speak to different record store clerks. Got my buddy Phil over at the Vintage Record in Annandale. He's always great with a recommendation. Continue listening to him. Looking out for some of the material that's on labels that I truly love and respect. Obviously, you know, Blue Note, if an artist is on Blue Note, that's kind of, you know, three quarters of a recommendation right there. Stax. But also looking at some of the other genres. I've started to get into some of the doom music. I think they call it doom. I feel like an old man. What do they call it? Doom rock? But bands like Uncle Acid and, you know, Cadaver and some of those bands that are like throwbacks to early Black Sabbath music. Some of that real heavy stuff. Labels like Rise Above Records and Southern Lord, they always have some pretty good stuff too. So really setting aside a percentage of my record budget, I'm saying probably 10%. I'll fluctuate here and there on that. To put toward new music, because I do want to continue to evolve my taste and to find new artists and to expand my mind there. And by the way, I'm also relying on the Vinyl Guide community. You listeners, please share your recommendations. I'd love to hear it. Particularly, you know, go to Facebook, you know, the Vinyl Guide Facebook page or Instagram. Tag me. What music are you listening to? What do you think I need to know about? You can look at most of my collection online. You could go to Discogs/Nate Goyer, or look at my Instagram feed and look at all the different records I have. You can tell pretty much kind of what direction I'm in, and maybe you have something that aligns to it, and maybe needs, you know, that I don't have. So make sure you you know, I want to hear back from you. I want you guys to keep me honest on this one, because really this is a phenomenal opportunity for me to be able to understand what you guys are listening to and maybe check out some new stuff that'll, again, enrich my life and kind of bring it up a notch. There's always room for that. So number five, New Year's vinyl resolution, make time for experimenting with new music. So do you guys have any vinyl resolutions? What are you going to change going forward? If anything, maybe nothing. Maybe you're totally happy and content with how you're doing your current vinyl collection. That's cool, but you know, I think there's always room to sit back and do a little bit of a self-assessment and see how we could make things a little bit better for ourselves and a little bit more constructive. That's always something I like doing anyway. So those are my five New Year's vinyl resolutions. Number one, avoid eBay where possible. Number two, support stores that have limited online sales. Number three, don't be too concerned with first pressings. Number four, clean and maintain equipment consistently. And number five, make time for experimenting with new music. All right, we're now into the third act of today's vinyl guide. Here is an interview I did with a gentleman named Mike Vague. I think I've shared this throughout the episode. Mike is a record dealer, record collector, vinyl fan, music fan. He lives in Southern California, but he deals records globally. I caught up with him at the Pasadena Record Swap, and we talked for a while, and he shared some really interesting insight on his history and the art of record collecting, which I thought would be informative and you guys would find interesting. So here's my interview with Mike Vague, and hope you enjoy. Cheers. So this is Nate, and we're here at the Pasadena Record. Is this the record fair, or this is the whole flea market, and this is the record fair section of the flea market?
Correct. Correct? That's the better terminology for it. There's a lot of history here, and I can sort of break it down simply. If it might not be as simple as it sounds, but I'll try. Years ago, we had a record fair locally in Los Angeles at Capitol Records in their parking lot, and it was in the late 70s. It was real active. There was a lot of music going on in town, you know, live music.
This is the circular Capitol Records building, right. The cylinder, the famous one, right?
Yes, that's correct. In their parking lot, they had an actual record show for many years. And it was really ground zero for a lot of culture. A lot of like punk bands got started out there, a lot of rockabilly revival bands. And just everybody who was someone who loved music was out at that fair, and that was the late 70s. And over the years, it evolved, and it moved eventually because of a variety of reasons. It was moved to Devonshire Downs and Northridge, I think, and even at the Hollywood Palladium, and it eventually landed here at the Pasadena City College off Colorado Boulevard, I think 25 years ago. There's a local vendor in the corner there who you can interview about it named Rich, who was sort of responsible for the relocating of it from there to here. He wrote the letter to the coordinators and the Student Activity Council to have it moved to the current location. At one point, there was a 5 or 6 year waiting list to get a space here, and that's obviously they've expanded the event and made it bigger and more indoor parking and things like that. So now there's a lot more vendors and a lot more space and, of course, a lot more record vendors. But that's sort of in a nutshell how it evolved. Now, there's other record fairs like Greater Orange County Record Show in Orange County, which has been just as popular. That's on the last Sunday of every month.
This is the one in Buena Park, right?
Correct. Yeah, right by Knott's Berry Farm. And
How often is this one held at Pasadena?
Every first Sunday of every month. And it's been like that for 25, 30 years or more. I've been actively out there for at least that long and as a buyer or vendor, and made a lot of friends and contacts and bought some of my favorite records ever at this show. I find it interesting when I travel that I see people in other places that are regulars here. I'll be in Europe or East Coast of America and, oh, I know you. Yeah, I met you at Pasadena 20 years ago. Oh, wow. You know, so this is a hub. A lot of people come here.
Right. Michael, you are a bit of a staple at a lot of these record fairs. I've seen you probably half a dozen of them just in California, but you travel all over the world selling records, right?
Well, I was just in Europe. I was in Berlin 3 weeks ago and then London 2 weeks ago and then Amsterdam or Utrecht, I think, a week ago. So maybe it's been 2 weeks. I don't know. But, yeah, I was all over Europe and, you know, I bring records there, I bring them back with me, and I love it all. Yeah, it's great.
How long have you been a record dealer?
I don't know. I mean, every collector is sort of a dealer. I was a professional DJ for a long time, and I evolved to this when I realized there was more of a future in it, and I don't want to be up till 3 in the morning anymore.
Fair enough. And so you travel the world, you sell records. What are some of the trends that you've seen recently? There's, of course, this whole vinyl resurgence. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great. And I think it's like finally, like my family understands me. Some of my friends who thought I was eccentric now see me as a little more realistic. And I find it like really exciting that like my niece, who's I think 12 years old now, is so excited that her uncle does this for a living. And she comes over and she's just a sponge, and everything I throw at her, she absorbs and loves, and she has her own record collection, and I had nothing to do with it. It's just the culture we live in, and I really think it's exciting that, you know, we're at a point where we can call some young people hipsters, because they are. They have distilled all the hard work that the older generations have slowly put together, and it's like anything. You know, you start with a horse and carriage, and then a jalopy, and then a bucket tee or something, and then a sports car, and then, you know, there's so many evolutions and so many things, and the culture we live in has evolved so well now that you can go on YouTube and type in an amazing garage record that you would never find and listen to it, and then there'll be like five pages of suggestions right behind it of as good records. And when I started out at their age, it was a real battle. You'd have to play them down the phone for people, pay long distance bills, and, you know, catch them at the right time, and then they would play their records, and it was a slow, and then these compilations would come out, and, you know, there was so much of that that it's evolved to this great point now. There's never been a better time, really, to enjoy music and collect records, because the access is immeasurable. As long as you have the time and to learn it, the records are out there. I mean, there's a question of how much you can afford, but it's unprecedented how much access is available to anything good. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And I don't understand why some people complain. They say they can't find records. I disagree. I think they just don't want to pay what people put into it, getting them. Some of these records, well, that's $100. I go, do you know what he went through to get that record? I mean, it's not going to just, you're not going to go to a swap meet at 4 in the morning and get lucky all the time. It's a lot of work.
And can you imagine how much joy that record's going to bring you? You spend a lot of hundreds of dollars on drinks and food and different things like that just evaporate within 24 hours. Yeah. Here's a record that will last you years and years and years if you choose to do it.
And it's like, well, I've been accused of having too many records by a lot of people, and that might be the case, but one thing they don't think about is, like, it's there when I want it. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not going to keep everything forever, and I certainly know I can't take it with me when I go.
So how do you discern, because you have your personal collection, no doubt, and then, of course, you have what you sell. How do you discern, like, how do you talk yourself out of keeping something when you need to sell it and vice versa?
Well, two things. If it's an easy sale and it's not, if it's something I know I won't play more than twice, then it's easier to let go of. But you have to ask yourself a reverse question. A lot of people never think of it this way because of the law of attraction. You can put that toward this. If you were willing to pay $200 for a record and enjoy it, then you should own it. But if you won't pay $200 for it and you own it and someone wants to buy it, you just bought it for $200. Because if you think about it, you just turned down $200 for something you don't use. So if you can just reverse it in your head, like, for a split second and go, you know what? There is someone who wants this more than me, and that can help you draw the line a little bit. A good example, at Buena Park last week, a well-known dealer across from me turned up a copy of the Distortions album by The Litter, which is just a five-star, punch-you-in-the-nose, amazing garage record. And I've been after a real one for years. Didn't feel like buying one on the internet, but he had it in front of me. He wanted $1,200, and I said I'd buy it for $1,000. And he thought about it for a few minutes, and he went for it. And I was overjoyed because it's been one I've been wanting a real one of for almost 25 years, and I had a late 70s pirate issue of it. And I got rid of that this morning immediately to another guy for $40, and he's over the moon because he has one to listen to. But at the same time, I upgraded to a real one that I will play over and over again and love and own rather than having the reissue. Now, other people think the other way around about it, but I look at it like having a smart investment. That record's amazing, and I think it's going to be $1,500 in 6 years. You know, I got chastised for paying $30 for a white label promo of the Stooges' first album in 1984. And that record, you can't touch a white label promo for under $250 now. So who had the last laugh, you know? It's like, yeah, it was painful then, but I'm really happy I did it now.
I'm looking at some of your stock you have here, and it's incredible. You've got Miles Davis Kind of Blue, a first pressing, a Six Eye. You've got it's a beautiful one. That wasn't the one that fell on the concrete. And you've got a Velvet Underground, Banana Unpeeled.
It's a yellow label promo mono with a torso on the back, and the cover is almost double plus, and so is the vinyl. So anyone out there who knows what that is will, like, kind of be surprised. That doesn't come out to record fairs.
You've got a brilliant collection, and there's lots and lots here for you to see. Now, you're so closely associated with records and LPs. Is this the only format you listen to music on? What else
45s. Do you have? I actually better known for 45s. I just did a trade with my close friend, a writer, Dave Nair, really lovely guy. And we have a rotating trading thing with each other, and we just did $1,000 in garage 45 trades. I just put together a new box. He went through and picked a stack, and I picked a stack, and we just traded. And it's like what it's supposed to be. It's a record swap. And it's not all done online. It can be still done in person if you hook up with the right people and you're honest and don't, well, let me get it on eBay first. I mean, it doesn't need to be like that. You can share your music with friends. And I brought him back stuff from Europe that he was over the moon about, and he dug into his collection and dug up a lot of garage things I'm not familiar with, but I really enjoyed trading. So that, to me, is just as exciting as making a nut on money, you know. I mean, I'm just going to spend it on records anyway. So what's the, I mean, I got to pay bills, but, you know, I love records. So
before we wrap it up, tell me about, I'm going to ask you two questions. Number one, what is the, I guess, the best fishing story you have? What about a record you found, perhaps unexpectedly, that you
That's
just...
happened so many times. But, I mean, there's one that was really great. I was trying to beat someone to a local record fair up in Tacoma, Washington, and I got a little tenacious and drove 105 miles per hour trying to get there quick, and I got pulled over, as expected, and they basically didn't throw me in jail, but they gave me a court date, and it was really ugly, but I... was grateful they didn't haul me to jail, and I spent the night at a local truck stop. And the next morning, I got up and I went to use a phone booth. This is pre-cell phone days. And I looked across the street, and there was sort of this disheveled junk dealer type guy at a yard sale on a Monday morning. And I was with my fiance, Michelle, and we were walking around, and I jokingly said, "Wouldn't that be great to find a big old thing of soul 45? She goes, "You mean right there?" And lo and behold, there was this metal dumpster, and the guy had got some dead stock from a store that closed in Oakland from a long time ago. And I wound up buying, it had a sign on the box that said, "Blast from the past, 45s, 10 cents each." They were dead stock. And I bought 1,200 singles for $100. And I medium mailed them back to my mother's house when I, you know, when I got home 2 weeks later, they were there. But they were all a little mildewy because 4 days prior to that visit, they had been rained on. So some of them had been water damaged, but I think there was like 20 copies of Unique Blend, Yes, I'm in Love, and I was selling them for $10 at first and realized later they're worth $400. But, you know, stories like that are like, you know, of course I didn't care about the ticket at that point because, you know, those records quadrupled the cost or more, and I kept a lot of them, and I lived off them for a while. And on the way back when I had my court date, I went to another place in Sacramento and scored thousands of dollars worth of records for hundreds of dollars at another spot. And it was like, this is too good to be true. I mean, talk about turning lemons into lemonade. I'm out dealing with a really bad citation, and I'm still finding awesome records. And so I guess it was so much easier to do 10 years prior to now. And I lived through the better years of that, and that's why I'm so, I don't know, happy to still do this because I amassed so much product. But it's still out there, and people die, and people move on and let go of things, and... I'm having to deal with a couple of estates right now of close friends that are a lot of records, and I'm going to be wholesaling a portion of it because it's too much. Mm-hmm. And we're reaching that stage where, like, it's feast or famine. You're going to get out and find nothing, or you're going to hit that one guy that has a garage full. And it's like listing them individually is not simple. It's going to be work. So you have to kind of make a deal with yourself. Well, how much work am I willing to do, and how much do I want to do this? And that's what I'm dealing with now. But the idea of opening a retail store or being online 24/7, to me, it's like overwhelming. I'm not saying it's not for me, but I can't at this stage of my life. I'll just be at these two record swaps and occasionally the Bay Area ones and maybe in New York once in a while and in Europe, and life is simple.
But you like to roam. You like to meet people. You like to have these sort of conversations. If I may say, I think being in one single retail location would be quite limiting to you, wouldn't it?
If you bring the right people in, it would be all right, I suppose. But, I mean, you know, you amass more records being on the road because, you know, every weekend if you're at a different fair, you're seeing a whole city's worth of their best work. So, like, there's 30 or 50 vendors in that city, and they're all coming to the table with what they found in one room. I mean, hello, folks. That's common sense. You want to find records, start going to the record fairs more often. Always support your local shops if you just want to get your nut and get a simple fix. But if you really want to get into it, you've got 50 or 60 music lovers in one room with two tables worth of records. It's a no-brainer. You know, indulge them. Go and you could talk them down. You know, they sometimes eat the tax. Record shows are like the blood of this whole thing. In fact, I would say 30% or more of my retail business at every show is a local shop that comes and buys wholesale.
Stocking it up. Yeah.
Right, right. And I'm happy to do that. I mean, I'm getting what I want from it. I've got my stack of garage records right there. So, you know.
Is there a holy grail left that you're searching for?
There's always going to be a pot of gold at the end of your rainbow, isn't there? But I don't know. I found a lot of them.
which one still elude you? Which one do you have to find before you die?
What's the record I still want that I can't get? I don't know. There's not a lot of them left, honestly. I got most of them. That's a tough one. Well, there's a couple of Blue Notes I'm still missing, but they're not that. I'm not that like bloodletted on like getting them or whatever. That's a tough question. I don't know. Hmm. Yeah, that's her thing. I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, there's obviously those things I just think I'll never own or whatever. But I own most of them.
Okay.
I'm not a trophy collector. I'm a music collector. And if they happen to be trophies, it's that much better. But I can't stand when people know all the top 300 rarest records and they don't know the $10 records that are good, because that's what you cut your teeth on. You know, I love going through jukebox loads because I love hits. They're good records. I like Three Dog Night as much as I love The Gone or The Litter or any of these rare soul 45s I collect.
The Monks?
Oh, Black Monk time, but I'll get that eventually. That's something I've been after, but I'm just waiting for a clean one to surface. I don't mind paying a couple grand or a grand for a mint one.
What's the most you've ever paid for a record?
$5,000.
What record was that?
I bought a Stereo Butcher cover from someone once, and it sold right away for $15,000.
Mm.
But bear in mind that this was 12, 15 years ago. I've paid that. I gave $8,000 in cash and trade for the Inspirations on Breakthrough, which is a rare LA soul record. And I gave a similar number for a one-off acetate, a Northern Soul thing that's unique and a lot of people want from me. So there's just certain things that I've broken down on. And, you know, like I said, most of these types of things, because I'm a dealer, I've been able to get them slightly wholesale or whatever.
Yeah. Any advice you have for young record collectors, people just getting into the game?
Well, I mean, because the rules are different now, I mean, obviously you just can't go to the swap meet and hit everything with a portable like you used to have to. But, you know, now you can go on YouTube and you can listen to a lot of great music and learn it. And for the time being, just settle for compilations and reissues of some of them. I know for a fact I collect Sun Ra, and there's no way I'm going to own all the originals of Sun Ra's work. He's got, you know, a few hundred albums, and a large portion of them are very rare and handmade. So I'm sure it's doable to get a large portion of them. But realistically, I'm just as happy getting a $15 reissue of it. Those didn't exist when I was 18 years old. And I really find it exciting that you can go get... When I was in Berlin recently, I went into a bookstore, and their record section was so well put together. I was just astounded as I walked away. If you were like 22 years old and wanted to fill five shelves with amazing records and spend $10,000, you could get the best music ever made. They had Small Faces, every good Bowie record, every rare funk compilation. They were there and they were available, and they're all under $30. All the good Coltrane albums on Impulse that I had to pay $50 and $30 4 years ago, you can get reissues on heavy grade vinyl for $20. I would say sod having the originals, get the reissues, enjoy the music, and just be conscious as you're buying them about getting the best pressings. And past that, occasionally, just keep your eye peeled for the better ones that eventually they'll come your way. That's half the fun. You can't get it all in one go, and it would be no fun if you did. So it gives you something to do. It's a hobby, and it's a good one. It's better than drugs, trust me. I have friends who did both, and they all agreed the records are so much more interesting.
And quite often more expensive.
Yeah, well, one of my close friends used heroin for a long time, and he still says records are the better high. And he was notorious, you know. It's just never a dull moment. If you have ADD, this is the best hobby ever, you know.
Excellent. Well, Michael, thank you very much for spending time with us. I do appreciate it.
Well, this was really honorable. I'm glad that you took the time to talk to me. Thank you.
No worries.
All right.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide, the first episode of 2016. Definitely not going to be the last, though. It was quite an episode, quite long, but there was a lot to catch up on, and I hope you guys found it interesting. Want to give a special thank you, a special shout-out to Mike Vague. Anyone in the Los Angeles area, if you are at either the Pasadena Swap Meet or at the Buena Park Orange County Record Fair, make sure to try to find Mike Vague at one of those two events. He always brings top-quality stuff, so make sure you stop by, say hi, go through some of his stuff. There's always something worth picking up at Mike's table there. And as a quick reminder, you can always find us online at www.thevinylguide.com. From there, you could jump off to our Facebook, where you could like us, or you can follow us on Instagram. Make sure you stay part of those conversations, though, because we're going to be posting additional pictures and additional content that ties into this episode, so you can get some visual as well as the audio you just heard. All right, well, we'll be back next week with a whole new episode, so make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you then. Until then, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.